Time now for hour number two in our big two-hour get-together here on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. I am your anchor. And, of course, the host of the program is Carol Marks, one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick this hour off now with Carol in conversation, a conversation she had back at Families USA's National Grassroots Meeting, Health Action 2014 in Washington, D.C. She did a bunch of interviews there, and they're very, very interesting. And here now, she's in conversation with Stacey Sanders, the Federal Policy Director for Medicare Rights Center.
Now, when it comes to Medicare, one of the good things that is available, or going to be available, is mental health. And that is something that's new and very needed. So, and people have a right to it. So can you tell us a little bit about how that's going to be helpful?
Sure, yeah. So the Affordable Care Act does make a number of services available to people that weren't with Medicare, that weren't previously available to them. And the mental health services are one of those, as well as a number of preventive services, so colonoscopies and a number of different screenings that people may need to prevent more harmful health problems down the line. And the Affordable Care Act actually makes those benefits available under Medicare free of cost sharing, so people can go to their doctor and receive those services, and they will not have to pay any copayment or any coinsurance for those services. Another really important benefit is the creation of what's called the annual wellness visit. And this is a little bit different than a physical. A doctor won't necessarily do any diagnostic tests when a person comes in for the visit, but they will have an opportunity to sit down with their physician and talk about their health and talk about their needs and talk about risk factors for potential illnesses down the line. So that they can get lined up the right types of screenings and the right types of procedures moving forward.
And that's so important, the communication with your doctor. And it's not going to be that rushed 7 minutes that we often have. And, you know, I think that's a wonderful thing. Now, I also wanted to ask you about the fact that so many people on Medicare get turned down for different things that they need. And I find that's one of the things that people just shake their head at, don't know what to do. So can we talk about the fact that if you get turned down, that's not the end because there's an appeals process?
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's great you raised that because today we actually released a report about the most common calls that we hear for people who call our national helpline. We run a helpline for people with Medicare. And actually 30% of the 15,000 calls that we receive every year are from people who've been denied a health care service or a prescription drug. And those denials, you're absolutely right, they're very confusing for people, and very few of our callers know that they do, in fact, have a right to appeal that decision, and oftentimes an appeal can result in someone receiving that service or their prescription that their plan originally denied. So most often we see that those denials happen in Medicare Advantage plans and in Part D prescription drug plans, but you're absolutely right that there is an appeals process. It does take a fair amount of people have to be steadfast to go through that process, right? Because it has many steps, but it's absolutely worthwhile because it is a right that's available to people to appeal those decisions, and oftentimes it can result in a favorable decision for the beneficiary.
Are there other medical rights that we need to talk about that people don't really know that they're entitled to?
Yeah, I think people are not always often aware that there's access to free counseling services when they're making decisions about what type of Medicare coverage they should have when they're revisiting their Medicare coverage every year during open enrollment. There's a lot of really difficult choices to make in terms of weighing different variables about different kinds of plans. So you have to think about the cost sharing, you have to think about the premium, you have to think about what drugs are covered, and you have to think about, are there any restrictions on specific things that I need? Might the plan require me to get prior authorization or use the specific drug first before I try the one my doctor prescribed? And these are tricky choices, and it really helps to have an advocate. It really helps to have someone who can counsel you through this process And there are a lot of free counseling services available. Our helpline is one option. It's 1-800-333-4114. And also, every state has a state health insurance program, a SHIP. And you can go to your SHIP and actually talk to a counselor one-on-one about your specific health needs and what coverage is right for you.
And that is just, you know, so important. Now, what I wanted to ask you, when it comes to rights, people have the right for Medicare not to cut things. And it seems that they're doing a lot of that lately. And one of the things, and I'm going to give you a little pamphlet on it, that I'm so concerned about, and people don't realize that the things that get passed, Medicare and Medicaid, are going, they have passed laws that are going to make it very difficult for people with chronic pain to receive those injections that they need. And I can't think of anything that makes me angrier than seeing people in pain have their pain medications taken away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, there's certainly efforts, I think, and some members of Congress who are very interested in cutting or scaling back specific Medicare benefits, and it is very, very important that people communicate to their lawmakers that, you know, they don't want to see these benefits cut, and they don't want to have to pay more out of pocket for Medicare, because often I think, you know, many, many people are not in a position to afford more to pay for Medicare.
And, you know, I think there are solutions to some of these problems. Does your organization, you know, go about telling the various committees in Congress, you know, about some of the things that would really help, like enabling Medicare to buy drugs?
Yes, absolutely. That's actually one of our signature positions. And I think when members of Congress are talking about shifting more costs onto people with Medicare or cutting Medicare benefits, we say there's a whole lot that can be saved in the pharmaceutical space and in how Medicare secures prescription drugs that would do no harm to Medicare beneficiaries. So there's specific discounts that the federal government can receive for Medicare drugs for people who are low income. There's the ability to negotiate drug prices, particularly if you create a public formulary or a public prescription drug program. You could see some real savings there. So we don't really have a need to be cutting benefits or shifting more costs on seniors, because there are plenty of opportunities to save in different ways.
And what do you say to the people that are talking about, you know, Medicare is going to become insolvent? I forgot what the year was. You know, not too distant future. And, you know, when you talk about that, you fixated on that, and you don't talk about the cuts and other things that can be done. What are some other solutions do you think that can help with Medicare remaining solvent?
Sure. Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. I think people sort of become fixated on this, you know, in 2026, Medicare is going to become insolvent, or it's going to become bankrupt. And actually, that's, you know, hyperbole at its best. The Medicare program is not going bankrupt. We certainly are financing challenges for the program over the long term, but I think a lot of people don't recognize is that the Affordable Care Act took many steps to put Medicare on a more efficient spending path. And one way that they're doing that is through pilot programs that really change the way we pay for healthcare. So instead of reimbursing doctors on the basis of the number of services that they provide, they're going to start reimbursing doctors on the basis of the quality of the care that they provide, and really, you know, encouraging physicians in the Medicare program to be more efficient and to really aim to provide high-value care as opposed to high-volume care. So many of those pilot programs are already underway, and we think that they're a really promising alternative to the types of slash-and-burn cut benefits plans that some members of Congress are advancing. We need to give those programs time to work, and we need to see if they reap savings before we do something that would be very devastating for Medicare beneficiaries.
And the other thing that happens that I feel people just don't know about, get caught in the trap of Medicare, is the observation status. Is that one of the priorities that your organization is involved with?
Yeah, we've been working really closely with our partners at the Center for Medicare Advocacy on the issues of observation status, and we most certainly hear from people who've been in the hospital, who've had overnight stays, and who then need to go to a skilled nursing facility only to find out that their time in the hospital didn't count. And so they actually have to pay out of pocket for those long-term care needs coming out of the hospital because they were deemed an outpatient as opposed to an inpatient. And those cases are so difficult because the financial consequences are so devastating for so many families because the cost of those long-term care services are so high. So there's actually a bill in Congress that would, very, very sensible legislation, that would simply say, anytime you spend in the hospital in observation status, supposed outpatient status, that should count towards the coverage.
I think that patients have to know that the first thing you need to ask when you walk in the door of the hospital emergency room and you get admitted, you know, what is my status? And can that be appealed to?
That actually cannot be appealed. That is one reason why it's so vitally important that we find a way to count observation status towards those long-term care stays. And I think it's a major shortcoming of the system.
That's Stacey Sanders in conversation with Carol Marks. That was recorded at the National Grassroots Health Meeting, Action 2014 in Washington, D.C., that Carol participated in several months ago, put on by Families USA. If you want more information, go to MedicareRights.org, MedicareRights.org. You're plugged into A Touch of Gray.
A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where hostingforcheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself. Because hostingforcheap.com isn't just about domain names, it's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online. From building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase, hostingforcheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com.
Continuing with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here is Carol Marks in conversation with Max Richman. He's president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and as in the past interview, Carol spoke to him at the recent Families USA's National Grassroots Meeting Health Action 2014 in Washington, D.C.
I want to ask you, because it's so much in the news, the headline you hear about Medicare and Social Security, which I think throws people off from discussing the real issues, which we're going to do, but when is the two funds supposed to run out of their benefits?
They never run out completely, because as long as people are paying payroll taxes, you'll have money in the program. There will be a shortfall in 2033 with regard to Social Security, and it will, if nothing is done, which we're not advocating, but if nothing is done in the year 2033, there'll be a shortfall of about 20% in the payments that are due. Medicare is a little sooner. I think the latest number was 2024. So those are the real deadlines. And we're for, you know, we're not a group that has our heads in the sand and say don't ever do anything. But we want to have a discussion about long-term solvency for Social Security and Medicare for the sake of the program, not as a trade-off for fixing something else like the federal debt. That would not be the right way to go.
I couldn't agree with you more. So what I wanted to ask first about Social Security, what are some of the other issues about Social Security that you think people need to know, and what can we do to ensure that this wonderful trust fund is going to continue And the other thing I'm going to ask you after that is about the fact that people don't realize that Social Security isn't supposed to pay for everything.
Yeah. Well, the big challenge we face right now with Social Security really comes out of the White House. In the last budget, the president proposed a new formula for determining what the cost of living adjustment would be, which would translate into a smaller COLA. And anybody who's a beneficiary of Social Security knows what a COLA is, because it's that little bit of monthly increase that you receive annually. And it's not enough to keep up with the real cost of living for a senior citizen. But this new approach would reduce it. And it was in the president's budget. I just got an email that the president's budget, the next one, will be introduced or submitted to the Congress in on March 4th. We were at a meeting with some key White House staff yesterday, making the case for not including it this time. We didn't get a commitment. I think it probably will be in the budget, and I think it, I don't know how real it is, but I think it'll be.
Well, you know, I've always thought that the COLA originally was figured inaccurately. So let's talk about what the letter was, you know, and the COLA, was it the E one? But anyway, it wasn't, in the beginning, it wasn't correct.
Right. The current formula, well, before the mid-70s, there was no annual COLA. Congress just periodically would pass a law to raise the benefit, and that got very political. So the COLA was set up to allow an increase in Social Security benefits to keep pace with inflation. Unfortunately, the formula that's used measures inflation from year to year as it impacts a wage earner, which is different from how inflation impacts a Social Security beneficiary. As an older person has a different market basket of goods and services that he or she relies on. And that is not what's looked at in the current formula. So that's why I said the current formula produces a COLA that is not enough to keep up with the cost of living for a senior, which was the purpose of the COLA.
Now, what about the one that's been proposed?
The E one. Well, there are two. There's
okay.
The chain CPI, which the White House has proposed, which would, if the current formula is inadequate, this would be even worse, because it uses the idea of substitution. In other words, if the price of something goes up, it's assumed that the consumer would pick something cheaper. Well, that may work, again, for a wage earner. But if you're a senior, there are certain things you can't substitute, medicines, and you don't have the mobility to drive around to look for whatever might be cheaper. Then there's the one you mentioned, the CPIE, Consumer Price Index Elderly, which is the best formula.
I think it's terrific, and let's talk a little bit about it, because when people go to protest, our listeners, about what's being proposed, the new formula for COLA, let them at the same time, promote the formula that we're going to talk about now.
Right, the CPIE, Consumer Price Index Elderly. And that's a formula it's experimental. It's been on the books for probably 25 years. It would produce a slightly higher COLA, which adds up over time. It's small, it may be small the first year, but that whatever the COLA is built into the base of the Social Security benefits, so it compounds like interest. So it would have a significant impact over time, and it has never been applied. The law, it was passed as an experiment just to see what that would do, but it's never been applied to the actual calculation of the COLA. There is legislation in the Senate. Senator Harkin has a bill. In the House, Congresswoman Linda Sanchez of California has a bill. They would actually put into place the CPI, which would produce a more accurate. That's all we're saying. Don't make it less.
Absolutely.
Just make it accurate.
I'm going to find out the number of the bills of the people that you just mentioned so we can put that in. Sometimes there's some good news. What about the fix for the doctors that have been in limbo every year about what the amount they're going to get paid for Medicare?
Yeah, well, it seems like the Senate Finance Committee and the House Ways and Means Committee are pretty determined to find a permanent fix, to change how that doctors are reimbursed so that we don't get a crisis each year. Now, if we don't fix it again in the next month or so, doctors' reimbursements for Medicare patients will be cut by, I think it's 22%. They'll leave the program if that happens.
Absolutely. And then what are all the people going to do on Medicare? And as it is, we have a shortage in our country of primary care physicians. It's hard to get in to see one, and we have a shortage of geriatricians.
It's my understanding that the House and Senate committees are have acknowledged the need for a permanent fix, so we don't have to keep coming back to this at least once a year. They're just trying to figure out how to pay for it.
Are there any other bills that that you're promoting, such as the bill that might help with Medicare being able to buy drugs? I mean, wouldn't that make sense?
Oh yeah, we support. There's really quite a number of bills that would not just allow Medicare, but require Medicare to negotiate the best price, like the Veterans Administration does for pharmaceuticals, for their Part D Medicare, the prescription drug portion of the Medicare program. As it is now, the Medicare is specifically prohibited from negotiating. You can imagine who made sure that was put into that prescription drug law.
That's Max Richman, President and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, talking to Carol Marks at the recent Families USA National Grassroots Meeting Health Action 2014 in Washington, D.C. If you want more information, go to ncpssm.org. That's ncpssm.org. We'll be joined by our senior correspondent Richard Neer next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to the final segments of our second hour here on the program, and we'll be joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, a man who has many feathers in his multi-feathered cap. And coming up in just a moment, Richard's going to be talking to Virginia Morris, an award-winning journalist who's devoted her career to researching and writing about healthcare, medical research, and related social and political issues. She has a book that is directly titled, very, very to the point, How to Care for Aging Parents. And it's published by Workman. And Richard, the people that listen to this program have often been referred to as the sandwich generation. Of course, this program has been on the air now for about 20 years. So there are new people that are becoming the sandwich generation as old ones pass on into old age. I mean, we actually have a generational shift in the history of this program. But I would say that at this point, people 50-plus, which makes up a large segment of the population, baby boomers, if you will, are dealing with aging parents and aging children, many of whom are living under the same roof, certainly many of whom are drawing upon the same savings account. What's your observation of that?
Well, yeah, that used to be sort of the Asian model, wasn't it, where you had entire families living in one house, three generations, and it's starting to become this way in America with college-educated kids coming back to live with their parents because they can't find jobs. And, of course, then the older generation, where they have outgrown their homes and they are looking for a place to be, and there's guilt involved here with our generation not wanting to put them into homes, nursing homes. That's not what people want to do. So very often you have three generations living under one roof.
Yeah, yeah. They haven't really outgrown their homes. Their homes are too big for them. They've outgrown the need for the home. If anything, they
Indeed.
Need to downsize. I just came back from a seminar discussing millennials. Those are people that are, you know, basically the stereotype of living at home with their parents after they're in college, and now they're 30 years old, or 28 years old, or 25 years old, and they're living in the basement and not having a job. And it's a fascinating generation indeed. There are approximately 90, 95 million of them compared to about 75 million boomers. So they're now the biggest generation out there. The boomers no longer have that distinction. Let's talk more about that after your conversation with Virginia Morris, which is coming up when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, in conversation, as promised, with Virginia Morris. She's an award-winning journalist who has devoted her career to researching and writing about health care, medical research, and related social and political issues. She's going to talk to Richard about her new book titled, How to Care for Aging Parents, published by Workman.
And, Virginia, thank you so much for joining us. And, boy, this is a subject that so many of us are facing, or if we're not facing it personally, we have friends who are going through this. And, you know, it when we were younger, it didn't seem like a big deal, aging parents. But certainly, boy, when we're boomers ourselves and we have parents in our 70s and 80s, it's a very difficult road to hoe. First of all, when we talk about care, is it always, you know, there's no one size fits all. Well, should the parents move in with you? Should the parents be close? There really isn't any prescription for what you should do, is there?
Well, every situation is different, but there's definitely some themes. I mean, I would say everybody should start talking to their parents sooner rather than later, and make sure they've had really pretty in-depth discussions about their goals and wishes, things about finances, how are they going to pay for long-term care, and do they have proper legal documents in place, and where would they want to live, what kind of end-of-life care would they want. I mean, these conversations need to start, you know, early. The earlier the better. So I think that is definitely something that applies to everybody. And the other thing that applies to everybody is just taking care of yourself once you're really in this. You know, it can be pretty grueling. It's a lot of time, a lot of energy. People are exhausted. They feel guilty they're not doing enough and resentful they have to do so much. So stopping to take care of yourself actually, ironically, means better care for your parent. If you're sort of calmer and set some boundaries and accept help and take care of yourself, it'll mean better care for your parent, too.
Oh, there is no doubt about that. I've seen it happen so many times where there's almost more stress on the caregiver than the person who's being cared for. And that's something that when you're a caregiver, you're constantly thinking about the other person and you're neglecting yourself. And you're absolutely right. As a result, the quality of the care isn't as good.
That's right. That's right. You just, you know, we just think we have to do it all. And even for caregivers who aren't with a parent 24/7, there's that sort of constant worrying, that being on call feeling of that it's your duty and that you're not doing enough or you should get over there for one more visit. So it's, you can't separate the two. I think if you're calmer and patient and understand the boundaries of this, it'll actually be better for your parent, too.
We're in a very advanced technological digital age, and you point out that in a lot of ways it's good and helpful, but there are pitfalls to that. Tell us what some of the pitfalls with our digital age are for aging parents.
Well, there's so many new gadgets on the market, you know, very elaborate pill dispensers and fall detectors and motion detectors and health monitors that kind of make us feel that our parent is okay. But the fact of the matter is, you know, did Dad just take his pill from the dispenser and then forget it when he went to get the drink of water? You know, are they really okay? And, you know, we still have to be there. They still need human contact and human touch, and none of the technology is ever going to replace just the need to actually be together and see them in person. So, and I think the basic problems remain, you know, you worry about your parent, are they lonely, you feel guilty, you're not getting along with your sibling, you're worrying about how you're going to pay for things. So the technology is helpful, but it doesn't really mean your parent can just be left alone.
Oh, that is so true. I mean, Skype is a wonderful thing, and you can have face-to-face contact, but an example in my situation with my late mother who had Alzheimer's, she would take the pills, and, you know, my sister found them stuffed in the cushion of her easy chair. You know, she'd pretend to take the pills and not take them. So you really, it's not just a question of being there, but it's a question of keeping a pretty sharp eye on them.
Yeah, exactly.
Talk about estate planning, too, because that's something that, you know, it's something you don't like to talk about because it's something, well, it's after you're gone. You don't want to think about that. But it is so important in this day and age and so complex where many people have been in a lot of different jobs where there might be pension money due, there might be health care benefits due. It's just a lot to keep track of.
It is, and again, you know, not to keep repeating, but, you know, talking about it early and getting all that information, locating important documents, you know, making sure your parent has a durable power of attorney, advance directives in place. And, you know, estate planning isn't just something that people with large estates need to do. People need to look at when they would qualify for Medicaid, how they can get on Medicaid, not spending more than they need to get the coverage they need, making sure they're getting the benefits that are that they're eligible for. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be a huge, overwhelming process, but it's definitely something there's, you know, a lot of basic steps you want to make sure you have in place. For example, if you don't have even just a simple durable power of attorney, you know, you can find yourself later going to court to get guardianship. It's, you know, time, it's money, it's exhausting. You just don't want to have to do that. So, you know, getting everything in place early on is going to really help you out later.
One of the things, too, that I think a lot of us encounter is as you get older, you still want to maintain your independence. And I can see myself in that position where, no, you don't have to help me. I can do it myself. And you encounter that with parents who are stubborn and no. And how do you tell them, how do you approach the fact that, you know, no, you can't. Maybe you really shouldn't be driving that car. Maybe you shouldn't be living on your own. How do you have those conversations?
Well, I think there are certain issues. If your parent has dementia, you mentioned driving. I think certain issues of fraud and exploitation, you know, that you can't be timid about. You know, when somebody else's life is in danger, such as driving, you really need to take it, you know, head on. But I think otherwise, you know, you also have to respect your parents' rights and their own wishes. So you're exactly right. I mean, this is probably one of the most common things I'm asked. You know, I think you listen first is most important. You know, why do you feel you shouldn't move out of this house? What's so important to you about staying here? What are you afraid of if you move? You know, talk about the risks, explore the options. Really trying very hard to keep your parent at the helm. I think the loss of control is a very difficult thing, and you want to really, you know, not take over your parent's life, but help them maintain as much control as they can. So I think kids think they know best. Certainly when we were 16, we knew better than our parents, and then we realized maybe we didn't, but now we get older and realize, oh, maybe we do. You know, I think it's respecting them and respecting their wishes and knowing when you have to intervene a little more aggressively, when you have to back off a little bit.
And sometimes you have to learn to just weather their slings and arrows and don't take it personally because it's a very tough time for them to admit that they can't do what they once did. And they're going to say things, some hurtful things. We've seen this happen a lot with friends where very hurtful things have been said by parents to the children who are just trying to do the right thing for them.
It's so true, and you're right. Don't take it personally because it's really not that they hate your cooking. It's they are sad that they're not able to cook anymore or, you know, it's their own loss of control and loss of ability, the loneliness, and often they take it out on you. But as my husband thought we should call this book, Be Nice, You're Next. you know, we do have to keep in mind that we will be there one day fighting for our independence and control. And, you know, we boomers aren't going to give up the reins any easier than our parents did. So, you know, it takes a big dose of compassion and patience, this job.
That's Virginia Morris in conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. And the book that she has written is titled How to Care for Aging Parents. It's published by Workman. Richard Neer returns for some final words when we hit our final segment of this two-hour get-together in just a moment. On A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups continues.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to the final segment of our two-hour get-together and a continued conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. Richard, before your interview with Virginia Morris, I mentioned the millennials, Generation Y, something like 90, 95 million of them, they're coming of age now. They are, in fact, our children. They are the children of the baby boomers, and now they're not children anymore. And as I said, I was at a seminar discussing them from a radio station perspective of how do you get millennials to listen to radio when they're almost listening constantly to their earbuds on the internet, and texting each other and tweeting each other and Facebooking each other. And basically what I learned is that they're probably one of the most caffeinated, stressed out, frustrated, and highly pressured generations in modern times in like the last 50 years. And facing enormous debt for college and bleak prospects for employment. Quite a picture, huh?
Gee, make me want to just jump off my window here. You know, the interesting thing about millennials, Michael, and radio, I recently started taking my vast CD collection and putting it on these little SD cards. And I, in fact, with all my favorite classic rock artists, was able to put an entire library of music on one card the size of a postage stamp. And you wonder, well, why do kids not listen to radio? Well, if you could carry around all your favorite songs on an iPad or iPod or some little device or on your phone and something the size of a postage stamp, well, there's your answer, isn't it?
Well, yeah, maybe radio then should be playing songs that you would then think about adding to your postage stamp as opposed to ones that are already your favorite songs. How do they become your favorite song unless some bright curator turns you on to them? And
exactly.
Somebody that you have confidence in who spends full time studying the trade, studying what's going on in the nightclubs, in the garages, in the studios, and that's what's missing from radio today, big time. And not to mention subject matter on talk shows that young people could get into. Are young people going to baseball games anymore? Baseball starting, and you're a sports expert. What are the demographics of baseball fans these days?
I think it's getting older and older.
Yeah,
I think it really is. It is because there are other sports to play. When we were growing up, it was just Little League. Now there's football, basketball, there's the X game type sports, skateboarding and things like that. And baseball is a little, you mentioned that attention thing where kids are, you know, caffeinated and moving fast. Baseball is a very slow-moving sport, and they like action.
Do you think if anybody came along and redesigned baseball to be faster-moving, that it might help the sport in terms of its longevity? Like they just reconstructed baseball where it had all the skills and strategy, but that it was now pepped up a little bit, and, you know, that could be done.
Well, they talk about it all the time, and the biggest drag on baseball is the time between pitches. There is actually a rule that when nobody's on base, you got to throw the ball within 12 seconds, and it is not enforced, and you see pitchers fidget and walk around the mound and lick their fingers and grab their crotches, and, you know, 30 seconds go by before they throw the next pitch. And that, I think, is the main reason the games are slow and batters step out of the box, adjust their gloves, yada, yada.
One of the biggest differences between baseball and the other big sports is that the other sports operate with a time frame. When the clock runs out, the game is over. And also, there's uniformity on the playing field. Baseball's the only game where the fields are different. the actual dimensions of the fields are
different. Yeah. The rules are different. You have a DH in one league and no DH in the other league.
I want to talk more about this with you in coming shows. Fascinating stuff, but we're out of time, and always time's well spent when you join us. Richard Neer, senior correspondent on our program, thank you. And thank you to Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine, Steve Wiseman, Beverly Santanello, our producer on the front line, and certainly a huge thanks to Carol Marks, the founder and host of the program. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, your anchor, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another 2-hour installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.